It's the 8 o'clock hour of Cairo Nights. Mason, Mike, 98973 is the State Roofing text line. If you want to be a part of the conversation tonight, that is a great way to do that. Just shoot us a text at 98973. Now, we have a guest joining us. Mike, you want to set up the story here?
Over the past 2 months, it's been apparent that Washington State's unemployment insurance system was not functioning as it should. And part of the problem was that millions of, or thousands of thousands, I guess up to millions of people were logging in, trying to get through and couldn't get through. And initially, the thinking was that this is just a system overloaded for too many people needing unemployment insurance at one time. But then another truth started to emerge as well, and it looks like the system was being hacked into by various players, but in particular, a Nigerian-based group called, a cybercrime group called Scattered Canary. Joining us right now is Jim Bruner of the Seattle Times. He and two other Times reporters wrote quite extensively about the problems in the unemployment insurance system. Jim, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We talked with a writer at Wired as well about this whole business of Scattered Canary and hacking into the system. Your story was dynamite. It's absolutely worth a read in the Seattle Times. But my question, I guess the first question is, in looking at this system and how much money, and we don't know yet, I guess, how much money the state potentially lost through this siphoning of the money away by criminal groups, what do we know about Washington's system and why it specifically was targeted? It feels like, from what I'm reading, that it was one of the system's hardest hit nationally by groups like this.
Yeah, so far, the U.S. Secret Service, which is actually investigating this along with the Justice Department, said that Washington was the hardest hit, the primary target so far of these, what they said is a sophisticated Nigerian crime ring. And this security research firm called Agari that we quoted in our story has named that crime ring Scattered Canary. To be clear, we don't know what they call themselves, but they're West Africa-based. There's quite a number of these groups apparently operating in West Africa. It's been a problem for a long time. They go after businesses, they go after individuals, and they have transitioned to going after governments. And it's not clear 100% why Washington was targeted. It could have been a little bad luck. It could have been some vulnerabilities in our system. It's not, I wouldn't describe it as like a straightforward hacking situation where they got in, at least at this point, we don't think that they got in to the, you know, the mainframe or something and just wreaked havoc. What they did apparently was just use stolen identity information that they could have gotten from past data breaches, like the Equifax breach. And they went in and they just started creating fake claims, basically. And there was a sort of political pressure on the Employment Security Department to get the money out the door quick, because there's millions or hundreds of thousands of people in Washington State who need the money. Mm-hmm. And the federal government even pressured the state, or there was an expectation that the state waived its usual waiting week. So normally when a claim is filed and it's authorized, the state waits a week before they pay it. They use that time to contact your employer, things like that. So there was a combination of a massive rush of many legitimate claims, which these scammers were hiding beneath, I think. And there was definitely less scrutiny of the claims because of the massive number of them.
Jim, prior to us finding out about this particular group, or at least I imagine Secret Service already knew and some other folks knew, Washington officials were kind of called out by the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I think that was perceived at least within the Inslee administration as much a partisan attack as it was specific to any sort of inadequacies in the system. The state then, the story that you did, pushed back saying that it wasn't what the feds were saying, but does it turn out that the U.S. Attorney's Office may have known something about this specific to Washington when they initially made that claim that Washington's system is vulnerable?
Well, yeah. I mean, the U.S. Secret Service had put out a bulletin prior to, I think, the U.S. Attorney's statement, or around the same time. And clearly there's been an investigation going on. There's actually been some cooperation, I think. I mean, it's not all war here between right. The State Employment Security Department and the U.S. Justice Department. But, you know, there's no love lost, obviously, between the Trump administration and Jay Inslee.
Right.
So it's hard not to at least examine that. But the Inslee administration was upset, I think, that the U.S. attorney used the term vulnerabilities in the system. And they argued that, you know, if you're in a tech compromised situation, that you don't sort of advertise that your system is vulnerable. Mm. But I mean, clearly, you know, from the fact that apparently hundreds of millions of dollars were carted off by somebody, it was vulnerable. Security experts we talked to, by the way, said it may not be that Washington's system was more vulnerable than every other state system. I think that's still to be known. It could just be that we were targeted first. But regardless, I mean, you know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars, apparently. We'd like to know more about that actual amount and who got away with it. And that needs to be looked into. And, you know, we got to find out what happened here.
What are the odds that we're going to see any of this money again, that we're going to be able to recoup anything that's been stolen?
Well, that's a good question. I can't tell you that I have a great answer. The Justice Department said, the U.S. attorney said that they were able to stop some money from getting overseas, that there was a bank that was cooperative, I think, and they did not identify the bank, but they said that they stopped $120 million in fake, you know, transfers. So there's been some success in that regard already. In some past cases that the U.S. Justice Department has looked at that are sort of similar, they have been able sometimes to recoup some of the money, at least down the road in the long term. You know, some of these investigations take many years. There was a ring busted, I think, mainly in the California area that were scamming a lot of businesses. I think they arrested like 80 people or something like that a year or two ago. When they do that, they try to get some of the assets back, but we're just sort of at the beginning here of understanding what the scope of the larceny was. And so I think it's going to take a while to know, you know, whether we can get any of that money back.
We're talking to Jim Bruner, longtime politics reporter for the Seattle Times, about the state's, essentially the graft or the attack on the state's unemployment insurance system. Jim, what about...
I called it a monumental pilfering.
Yeah. Actually,
I like that.
I prefer that. That even to anything that I would say. That's perfect. Actually, I was gonna actually cite your story specifically and ask you to explain to our listeners. The story indicated that there were red flags that were missed through the process of all of this money getting siphoned away by crime rings. What were those red flags that the state may have missed in this process?
Yeah, and again, I will say, and I'm not trying to make excuses for the state, but there was, you know, this was amid a rush of a lot of
right.
claims going out. But we talked to some security experts who said there were things like money going to a bunch of out-of-state bank accounts in a way that you wouldn't expect. A bank executive told us that they were surprised, East Coast Bank, that Washington didn't pick up on that. Security experts also told us that this group, Scattered Canary, anyway, uses a scheme where they're called dot accounts through Gmail. And they essentially insert extra periods into the email addresses associated with Gmail. And by doing that, they're able to, I guess, because Google doesn't actually recognize periods when it parses those, they're sort of able to set up a whole bunch of accounts and then route them all to one main account. It makes it easier to do widespread fraud. And so if you know, Washington officials had been clued into that, maybe they could have spotted that. We also heard from readers who, you know, had their information changed, lots of people, and had accounts created in their name. And they had no idea. And that's how the story really first started to break earlier in May, when so many people contacted us about that. There was also the use of some, basically they're like disposable email accounts, a service called Yop Mail. So there was kind of a bunch of things like that could have been red flags, we were told.
Is this a situation where it kind of reminds me of like a dam, right? Like maybe the system, I know we just put something like $44 million into upgrading the software at the Employment Security Department. And is it possible that the tech was right, that the dam was built well and as it was supposed to, but there was just an unprecedented amount of water behind it that it broke?
Yeah, I think that might be a possibility. I mean, what we were told, and I think this is still something, you know, we're still continuing to report, you know, the agency replaced an old mainframe that ran on, you know, like a COBOL software platform, I think. So this wasn't a story of a creaky old platform that was out of date. It was actually a new one and a relatively new. And it came with some security controls. In fact, we reported in our story that one of the aspects of the system that the state had said, you know, one of the reasons it wanted it is that it would allow state officials to detect fraud. So it apparently had some tools. But as we quoted the Employment Security Office or Employment Security Department spokespersons and officials saying, they're always balancing sort of usability of a website, public-facing website, with those security flags. And so, you know, if you dial up the security too high, like the state of Michigan did actually a while ago, you suddenly get like 90% of your claims being flagged and nobody's getting paid and everybody's pissed off. If you dial it down too low, then people, you know, walk away with hundreds of millions of dollars. So that's maybe what happened here.
When you were talking to folks in the system, did they say that they have a clear path forward to prevent anything? Is there yet, or is it still too unclear what exactly happened to know what exactly the fix is?
Well, they've definitely made changes. They halted all payments for a couple of days earlier this month, which just was a huge clue that this problem was much bigger than they had acknowledged to date. They wouldn't shut down the system if it wasn't a big problem. And then they, even more recently, they are now delaying payments. You know, it's taking them longer to send out payments while they try to scrutinize them. So they've taken steps. They're trying to get a handle on it. They haven't actually asserted that they've completely blocked all the fraudulent claims, but they're aware of it now, and it's obviously the public's aware of it, and so they're doing what they can. They also aren't being, you know, 100% forthcoming with every step they're taking, because they say they don't want to publicize their anti-fraud techniques, because then the con artists might see that and get around them.
Did you happen to when you were speaking to the security company, did they say, was there any other state that was sort of had similar problems, the same group used similar techniques for any other system in the United States?
Well, yeah, the security company, Agari, you can actually go to their website and check it out. They've, you know, you do a search for Scattered Canary, you can see what they've published. And they, yeah, this group has hit other states too. It's just Washington so far had been the highest hit. I think we mentioned in the story, and you can start to find some news stories out there now, that states like Rhode Island and I think Oklahoma and some others have also experienced some of this. But, I mean, so far I haven't seen it to the extent that Washington has been hit.
So this money, let's just say it's a couple hundred million dollars out of Washington State. I mean, who then covers that? Is that going to be, is any of that money pass-through money from the feds, or is that exclusively money that Washington State is going to have to cut from its budget to compensate for?
Our understanding is that most of it is federal money that was kind of passing through, as it does in, you know, in employment situations, and in particular with the, you know, the CARES Act that Congress passed, I think it included enhanced benefits, and so most of it's federal money. So I don't, at least in the short term, we haven't been told that it's going to have a big impact on the state budget, but, you know, I guess it remains to be seen once we have a full accounting.
That is Jim Bruner. He is a reporter for the Seattle Times. Fascinating story. It's a big one. Definitely worth a read. Go check that out. Jim, thank you so much for spending time with us on Cairo Nights.
Yeah, Jim, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
So let me ask a question here of you, Mike Lewis. I can't shake the idea that when you've got a situation like this that's so vast, that of course there are going to be scammers, right? And so is this really, like, we all want to be mad at someone or something. Is there anyone else to be mad about other than the people who are taking advantage of the situation, and knowing that there are always going to be people who are going to take advantage of a situation?
Yeah, I think getting mad is appropriate. I think waiting to see how this plays out. I mean, it could be that, as Jim mentioned, that the folks who were managing the software here were not trained enough to sort of set the security level at the right level, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we all, in our own lives, sometimes don't want to do two-step notification, don't want to do the security things
right.
that actually make our own system safer. I suspect, in a larger way, the state may do the same thing. The second thing is that this story is far from done. And I would suspect that as we learn more about how they got in and what techniques they use specifically, we will know whether the system was designed to actually thwart this or whether it was not designed to thwart this, which is a bigger problem. If it mm-hmm. was designed to, then we need to recalibrate it in some fashion and maybe improve the training of the people who manage it. But if it was not ever contemplating this sort of attack, we've got a big problem to solve in the state. And so I think that it's best to, so for people who are angry, keep your powder dry for a little while longer and let's figure out who to be mad at other than the folks who did this like a really despicable act.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is
yeah.
taken away money from people who are very, very vulnerable right now. And of course, they don't care about that. They are moving that money overseas. But it would be nice if we could have some system by which we could recognize this stuff earlier. Losing a few million dollars would irritate everyone. Losing a couple $100 million potentially is mind bending.
Yeah, absolutely. I just have to think. I can't shake the idea that, I mean, I've never been to West Africa,
right.
but I understand that there is great economic distress in West Africa, right? And whenever you've got desperation, you've got people who are willing to do anything to try and make that go away. So this just seems to me, I'm not excusing the behavior. I think it's abhorrent. I think these people should be locked up for the rest of their lives for the kind of crap that they're pulling. But a part of me not necessarily sympathizes, but understands that, yeah, they are trapped in awful, awful poverty and are trying to take money from, as they see it, you know, one of the, if not the richest nation in the world, like they see themselves as Robin Hood.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's always an easy out. I mean, if you're stealing, you're stealing. And if you're stealing because you have need, it's understandable, but you're still stealing.
Sure.
And I would say that we don't know who they're targeting. I mean, we know that we got hit, but do I think that they are looking at this saying, well, you know, we're taking it from the U.S. government, but we're not actually denying payments to people who may lose their apartment or their house, which is what they factually are doing.
Right.
I mean, they're doing both things.
Right.
But they're looking, if we're to give them the credit benefit of the doubt, they're looking only at one end of the equation, not the other end of the equation, where the person is legitimately harmed who's needs that money.
Of
so
course.
I give people no pass for that. There are hacker groups in the U.S. There are hacker groups in Russia, hacker groups in West Africa, hacker groups in China. In China, they know one particular skyscraper that essentially is Hacker Central. South Korea as well. Every place with internet access has people who are going to go out there. And part of the problem in the United States is we haven't eradicated it here, but we also have never treated these crimes as seriously as we should, because no one's carrying a gun and going into a place
right.
to steal it.
Right.
When you can get more right. time for bank robbery of $4,000
right.
than you can of electronic thievery of tens of thousands, if not millions of dollars, we've got a problem in priorities in this country. And I think that is part of it, and I don't think that the West Africans and the abject poverty that some of West Africa is in, I don't think the people at the top of this organization are terribly poor people.
I couldn't agree more. And let me be clear, that was a thought exercise. I know people never hear me when I say I'm not defending or I'm not explaining. I'm just kind of thinking out loud, trying to put my
put myself
in there.
Yeah.
I know you get me. I think there's some folks on the text line who maybe don't get me, but I just want to be very
sometimes that's intense.
Very clear about that.
Yeah.
Fair. We'll be back, everybody. More Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mason, Mike. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's 8:33 on a Tuesday. Normally, Stacey Joe, although normally she it has not been the case. Stacey Joe joins us at 8:33, but she's coming in at 9. We're going to talk about something that well, frankly, everyone is talking about. It's only tangentially related to sports because it has to do with bird watching. That's my very thin connection into making it. But we I just love hearing from Stacey, and especially when we kind of get off the sports topic. She's just a smart person with a lot to say.
Well, and also she follows. I mean, her the world in especially in radio sports journalism is so social media based. I mean,
right.
She understands its effect, and she follows it very closely. And so this is a story as much about social media and the virtual pitchfork and torches that can happen there as it is about anything else.
Yeah, very much so. Let's talk about hospitals here for a second. We just spent some time with Jim Bruner talking about the unemployment scam that has been devastating people, hundreds of millions of dollars out of the pockets of folks who desperately need it here in Washington. And I can't help but draw a comparison to what some hospitals are doing in the area. And I'm not talking about the smaller places that have very thin operating budgets that basically the money that they bring in can pay for payroll for the next week or two. I'm talking about the big, big places, one of them being Providence Health System. It's one of the largest and richest hospital chains here in the United States. Now, they've got this spring, this is according to the New York Times, they got at least $509 million in government funds. Smaller, poorer hospitals are receiving a pittance compared to that. And Providence is sitting on about $12 billion in cash, which it invests. It's got like stock portfolios. There's no discernible difference, at least to me, between what happens on Wall Street and what this supposedly not-for-profit hospital system is doing.
Yeah, I mean, this has been the problem with the not-for-profit hospital system has been these complaints are not limited to this. I think it was a Providence hospital in the one in Everett, I think, that fired the emergency room doctor who was complaining that they were not following safe procedures with this is the very front end of the pandemic, brand new coronavirus patients. And they were testing people out in the parking lot or something along those lines. And so you have these not-for-profit, and the whole way you get not-for-profit status if you are a hotel, you're a hospital chain, is you trade that. That means you get a tax break, a significant one.
Mm-hmm.
You trade that to the government by providing charity services. In other words, you do pro bono work on people in the community. It's always many of these hospitals fall way short. Either they do very creative accounting on what actually was charity work, or they just don't do it at all with no real teeth behind it. And to see a company sitting on billions of dollars collect billions of dollars in aid is a little bit along the same lines as what we saw with the bond houses and with the investment firms and with the banks back in the mortgage crisis, collecting people who had caused the problem, then collecting on the problem, which seemed to a lot of people to be pretty deeply offensive, although we didn't appear to have the political courage to actually change it in a manner that would help us. This is another situation where these for-profit, or rather not-for-profit, which is not non-profit, not-for-profit hospitals have immediately put their straw in the drink. As soon as the government said, you know, we have aid to provide, they lined up, even with sitting on significant assets.
Now, they'll tell you that, you know, this money was available. We had to get it. Even the people doling out the relief money, they'll tell you priority was getting it out, right? We didn't want to sit on it and come up with systems and develop those systems and take the time to double and triple check things because this was an emergency and people needed that money. But I would argue that, well, can't you check? Can't you look at the balance of the place and know that if somebody is sitting on, you know, $10 billion, whatever it may be, that supposedly is for that emergencies, right? That's an emergency fund. That's the savings account that you go into when you need to tap it because something catastrophic has happened.
Yeah.
What else is that for?
It was not. It would be very, very difficult to say this was an oversight. I think that one of the problems that happened with the relief is that it really wasn't earmarked toward small business as everyone claimed it was. It was earmarked toward business. And the big businesses were much, I mean, when you have a team of people, including attorneys and accountants, that can get your paperwork in very quickly. And when you have a lobbyist who actually has the call list of local lawmakers, right. When you have those things, you're going to get to the front of the line. And this is what happened with companies like Providence and other companies that we saw from the Paycheck Protection Program relief aid, who lined up immediately to get their snouts in the trough again and take the bulk of what was supposed to be for companies that were on the brink. And it's a shame because I don't actually mind so much on the paycheck protection end. If it's actually helping people who are minimum wage people, as much of it was designed to do, I think that's great. If it's helping people at the higher end of the scale, I hope there is a cutoff point for it, and I appreciate that as well. I don't know that I am worried about as much about somebody making $300K a year when the paycheck protection thing rolled out, and the law didn't worry about them either, which was terrific about it. But this particular one in Providence and other hospital chains that are the not-for-profit hospital chains, it wouldn't bother me if they were at risk. Then absolutely, we need hospitals.
Correct.
But the ones that are sitting on giant piles of cash looking to make sure they just don't have to burn through their slush funds, that seems a little bit beyond the pale.
Yeah. We got two texts. One that agrees with us that this article is scary and horrible, and one that disagrees with us. Both work at hospitals. The one that disagrees with us, 425, says we get 40 cents on the dollar billed to most patients. You facts aren't true. I don't know what that means. What do you mean by that, 425?
So they're saying that when they bill, they only get, like, if they billed, let's say they billed over the course of a year, $1,000.
Sure.
They would only get $400. That's what they're saying. Now, what they're not saying is, and I think there are many cases. Anyone who has gone through their hospital bill could probably vouch for this, where you get a variety of bills from that. You get pay, and the hospital, the way you pay is you pay separate for the x-ray, and you're paying separate for this, and you get bills coming to you randomly over the course of the next several months.
Right.
If you've been in the hospital, some that you're like, what is this $300? What is this $4,000?
Yes.
Like, you never even recognize, in addition to what the hospital got. So, and those companies are also paying the hospitals. So I don't know that number, that 40 cents on the dollar. And I got to say, Providence, if Providence is sitting on $12 billion, I don't know. They're collecting a lot of those 40 cents. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile, you've got a place like UW Medicine who had to basically shift everything as far as the way that they operate when this pandemic started. Now you've got much more capacity for testing. You got all the stuff that was really front lines, and they took the lead in the nation on this. At least one of them, one of the leads here, that they employ about 30,000 people, and they are going to have to furlough another 4,000 folks. This after some other furloughs they've had to do, represents about 15% of folks who work for UW Medicine that are going to have to go without pay for anywhere from 1 week to 2 months.
I mean, and
it's gross.
And the UW, while it's not eligible for the same money, the same pool of money that Providence is, did get some federal aid, but it's a I don't know, like a fifth as much as the non-for-profit hospital got. And when you look at the way that the UW behaved in this whole process, how much it did to sort of advance the testing and the treatment, it doesn't seem to me incredibly fair.
Will Segment's coming up next, everybody. Stay tuned. Cairo Nights. Welcome back into Cairo Nights. Mason, Mike, Frank Shires is in with us. DB, of course, ready to crack that mic. And you at home, 98973. That's how you can text us. Shoot us a text after I spin this wheel of segments, because that's a problem. Find out what it is we're going to talk about. We debuted a new segment on Friday. It was the Random Fire, Random Question Robot. That was fun.
Very.
But the Questrotron 600 is going to stay quiet for another day, because it is Question of the Day, an old favorite. And this one is, I like this one. What's your favorite small pleasure at work? And not who you work with. I love my coworkers. I love, you know, what my job is. None of that. What's a little thing that just is makes you disproportionately happy compared to what it actually is? Mike, you want to go first?
Yes, I do. I want to go first.
What is it?
Which is unusual for me. One thing that I noticed it today, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I just noticed it today when we were talking with Rachel, and I said something, I don't know, we were talking about you taking your mom to the prom or something, yeah, like that. I made a crack about that, and she burst out laughing, and I realized that I like it when Rachel laughs hard at something.
Yeah.
Like if I've made her laugh hard, because she's pretty clever and she's very funny.
Yes.
And sometimes you make her laugh a bit, but then she has a pretty good ability to top you and make it funnier.
Yes.
And it's not without, that's great. But every now and then you can make her laugh enough that she just laughs and she can't actually top you in any way. And it's, for me, super satisfying.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. How about you, Frank?
Avanti.
Oh, the market.
Yes. Downstairs, people don't know this. Downstairs, we have a combination of a couple of vending machines that they're not really vending machines. They're just freezers where you open them up mm-hmm. and pull the stuff out, and then a nice pile of crap. And what I like about this is that I can go down whenever I want. If I just want crap to eat,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's all there one place. And I don't have to mess with a machine, a special machine that I could try to reach inside or none of that. It's just like open a door and take it.
Yeah.
You to pay for that, right?
What?
Huh? Frank's been bilking for millions.
I'm going to come drag him out of the office one of these days.
The truth is, Dave Ross,
yeah.
We have a Keurig machine, right?
Yeah.
Dave Ross was doing Keurig coffee, I think, mm-hmm. 4 months until somebody said, you got to pay for that, Dave. I swear to God.
He had a nice new coffee machine.
They busted John Curley. He owed them like $300 because they caught him on camera.
Really? Oh, I love that.
That doesn't surprise me at all. 360 says, the single stall bathroom, a.k.a. the one-holer.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
That's very popular here as well.
Yes. Love me one of those. And 253, I work alone, so I can choose my own start time every day. Mm, that is nice. That is tremendous.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of that kind of thing. How about you, DB?
For me, so much of it has to do with the bumping, the music bumps in and out of the segments, and mm-hmm. especially coming out of the segment, especially at the end of the hour when we hit that post and you hit the point in the song that I don't know, that just sounds exactly right for sort of going into the commercial break.
Yeah.
It just feels good. I don't know. It's just a fun, really good. Anything having to do, Frank knows this, with like keeping a really tight board and getting sort of everything hit at the precise time.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels good when you're in the rhythm of it. It's just awesome. There's nothing like it.
It is the best feeling in the world.
That's
if
cool.
You're pushing the buttons.
You're a craftsman.
It's like executing a couple of good turns skiing. Like it, you finally figure out, oh, that's what it's supposed to feel like.
Yeah. I love that.
The best.
425, I used to teach third grade in SoCal. While the main building had no AC, my portable AC, which I kept at 67 degrees, and told the kids to bring jackets year-round, even if it was 100 degrees outside. Yeah.
That's great.
I love that. For me, it's the gear. I love working in a place with microphones and soundboards and editing computers and the ability to sort of take something and grab this audio and cut it up and just all that kind of stuff. When back when I had time, I would do like song parodies and things like that, and would go in and work with Mike Sievers, who's a guy who does a lot of the commercial stuff that you hear during the breaks. And he would kind of be like an engineer, and I would get to sing. We'd multi-track, and I hear the music back. It really felt like a you know, it's a proper studio. Like there's a lot of really fancy schmancy equipment here that satisfies all of my hobbies. So that's a big one for me. I did want to say free coffee. Because, and I know it's like garbage. I mean, it's work coffee. I get it. Mm-hmm. Everybody says it's garbage. Nothing tastes better than free.
I think it's pretty decent. I've had, having worked in newspaper newsrooms, you want garbage coffee. They set records.
And if you haven't noticed, the morning show around here makes coffee that will like burn your upper palate.
Yeah.
It is.
Oh,
the stuff that Ranishevitz makes in the morning.
Oh, baby.
Oh, my God.
He double packets, I know.
Yes, he does.
He does.
It's a little scary.
He does. I like that double. I'll take that, though. I'll take that double coffee. You just put a little extra cream in it. That's all.
Oh, my Lord.
It buffs it right out. You get that caffeine bump.
And you're awake for the next 2 days.
Which is fine. I don't know. I've built up quite a tolerance to caffeine, Frank. I don't think it does much for me anymore. Whatever. I like it, though. Free coffee. Guys, 9 o'clock hour comes up next. We got Stacy Joe. We're going to talk all about this situation that happened in Central Park. It's been all over the internet. If you don't know what it is, we'll tell you. And then, the greatest of palate cleansers. It's Tuesday, so we're going to spend Tuesdays with Miley. Cairo Radio's Miley Katie comes in, and she shares some good stories with us, some positive, uplifting stuff amid all this negative news. And that comes up in the next hour right here on Cairo Nights. Stay tuned.